From Port Otago, welcome to Kevin, Paul, Stephen, and I understand Pat Hessen is in attendance as well. Pat is Deputy Chair, have I got that right? Port Otago and Chair of Audit and Risk. Paul, of course, is Chair of the Board. Kevin, of course, CEO, and Stephen, Chief Financial Officer. So welcome to you all. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. We'll come back to you shortly. Apologies, we have an apology from Councillor Laws, but I understand he's going to join us via Skype shortly. So the appropriate staff are in attendance. Item number two. Number three, confirmation of the agenda. I'm not aware of any changes or for any reason such as the need to deal with an item of urgency. Moving on to conflict of interest. Item four, just the standard reminder for everybody to be aware of. Public forum. I believe we have a public forum this morning. And moving on to item six, confirmation of the minutes. And these are the minutes from the 27th of November 2009. Someone like to move? Moved by Councillor Hope, seconded by Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Actions, I'm not aware of any actions. Just checking with the Chief Executive. No? Okay. So we'll move to item eight, which is the presentation from Port Otago. So we're in your hands. I understand you've got a PowerPoint presentation, and I imagine you're quite happy to take questions as we work our way through, if councillors wish. Is that okay?
Sure.
Excellent. So Kevin, Paul, Stephen, in your hands.
Is that on diligent?
Is the presentation on diligent?
No.
No. Oh, right. No. Okay.
Will it be?
That's if it's me, I'm happy to
circulate it.
Just copy it after you're done.
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. As Andrew has said, my name's Paul Ray. I'm the recently appointed chair of Port Otago. As I'm sure you're all aware, I've been on the board for 9 years, and for all of that period, we've had our focus on updating and preparing infrastructure to ensure that our port is equipped to cope with the next generation of business. This has been a very successful period, and we've largely completed a major capital program that we needed to ensure that we have a sustainable set of assets, which we do now. Projects have included channel deepening, warehouse extensions, wharf extension, replacement of floating plant, tugs, log yard modernisation and expansion. And we believe it's now time, having spent quite a lot of effort and capital on setting ourselves up for the future, it's now time for us to focus on best utilising the new infrastructure in an efficient and, underlined, sustainable manner. We've embarked on a bold sustainability program. It has three prongs. Firstly, we focus to ensure that we have long-term financial resilience. We do this with added focus on operating costs and balance sheet health. We are a fixed-cost business, and our port business is largely driven by export activity in Southland and Otago. This export, or the volume of this export business, is outside our control. We take what we can and do the best with it. Our business has to have cost structure that can accommodate periodic downturns. We're going to talk later about what we predict for the next two quarters. It has to cope with periodic downturns in volume, and it has to have a balance sheet that gives us flexibility to react to cash demands as they arise. Secondly, the second prong is our impact on the environment needs to be positive. We need to ensure our operations are leaving the environment in a better state. Our waste, our activities on the water, our carbon emissions all need to be addressed. And thirdly, in order to be a sustainable business, we need to be a good neighbour, at Port Chalmers and in our Dunedin operations. We've commissioned a materiality survey, which is about to start, to ensure that we're going to put our energy into the right areas for best and prompt results. This survey will engage all our stakeholders, including our neighbours, and seek their input before we prioritise our sustainability journey. I want to communicate up front in this presentation that we will be declaring our first interim dividend of $4.5 million. This is $0.8 million higher than we indicated in the current year's statement of corporate intent. We're now aware of our shareholders' desire for an increased dividend, and we're keen to react to this, balanced with our need to maintain a healthy balance sheet. And based on our present view of the second half, we believe we can flow these dividend changes through to the second interim dividend in June and our final dividend early in the new financial year. So $4.5 million dividend will be declared today and will be distributed tomorrow or today. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yes. Group highlights.
In anticipation. Thank you very much.
Group highlights. Container volumes are slightly down versus the same period last year. This is driven by both a poor December quarter weather-wise and Fonterra's desire to push milk powder sales out into 2020 from the first half of our financial year. Fonterra are by far our biggest container customer. All of the available Fonterra warehouses in the region are 95% full at the moment. And this means that export volumes are starting to ramp up because there's nowhere else but for the milk to go but overseas. And this is forcing export sales and stronger container volume. And we see these warehouses typically year by year empty out by, what, end of May?
31st of July they're empty.
Yeah, 31st of July for their financial year. So we expect that we're going to continue with the strong milk production volumes that we're getting during the second half, and we're going to empty these warehouses on top of that. So we see our milk powder exports looking very good in the second half. Meat exports in the first half were flat versus prior year, and our bulk business is flat versus last year. And this flatness is actually quite an achievement because in spite of falling log prices during the December quarter, we've been able to manage to maintain our log volume.
Paul, I might just get you to stop. There's a question from Gary.
Gary
Keller.
Sorry to interrupt, but just around your warehousing, is coronavirus having any impact, or is it likely to have an impact on the ability if you filled to that level normally? Is that going to become an issue?
Kevin.
Yeah, well, it does become an issue in the supply chain. That effectively, once you're full in New Zealand and you have to have MPI approved warehouses for food grade, so you just can't put pellets of infant formula in substandard warehousing, so it does have to be approved. So when that sort of supply chain is filled up, you're forced to either then sell into the market and ship it or take drastic measures at plant, which typically doesn't happen.
And I guess your question is, are we confident about getting it offshore? We haven't seen any evidence yet that coronavirus is going to impact Fonterra exports. But, there's a new surprise every day with this thing, so it's not completely a home run.
And I'll touch on that a little bit later because Fonterra's product's typically dry, so it's a dry container. So dry containers are relatively easy to store. It's the refrigerated containers you need plugs and power at every port. So that's an issue we'll get to later.
Thank you.
Thanks. So back to our log business. In spite of falling log prices during December, we were able to maintain, the forestry production was able to maintain prior year export volumes. Coronavirus aside, the Chinese demand for New Zealand logs was already declining and prices were falling due to increased European and Russian supply. And that's been driven by some beetle infestation in the harbour, in the forests in those two regions, which is driving early harvest of a lot of forests in Europe and Russia. Kevin's going to speak in some detail what he knows about the impacts of coronavirus later in the presentation. So, cruise activity. Cruise activity is at a similar level to the previous year. Bad weather in the December quarter drove four early season cancellations. We had six less Fiordland piloting jobs. In fact, it'll be more than that. That's up to 31st of December versus the previous year because of weather. And as I say, that trend has continued through January and February also due to weather and the floods and the logs and the closure of the Fiordland waters. For the full year, we expect a total of 123 visits versus the plan of 130. And that compares to prior year of 115 visits. So we're still growing. We expected to grow a little more this year, but the weather intervened. Chalmers Property. Chalmers Property net profit after tax is up 18% on increased sales at our Hamilton development. Subsequent to the closing of the first half result, we had another $9.3 million land sale in January, which has really set us up to pretty much ensure that we're going to meet our full-year budget for this business. So we're pretty happy with that. Kevin is going to talk further about some of our project successes in the first half, but I wanted to mention two in my piece. The first one is asbestos. During the period, we completed our ambitious and challenging plan to rid our assets of asbestos contamination. We cleaned and demolished the Fryatt Street wharfside buildings, which were rife with asbestos, and we did that cleanly without incident. And similarly, we cleaned up and removed two asbestos-contaminated buildings at Port Chalmers. So we're now, best of our knowledge, asbestos-free.
We are.
Well done, Kevin. And this is the one I wanted to talk to rather than have Kevin talk to it, but it really Kevin did all the work, and Kevin and his team did all the work. The Rio class container ships from Maersk came.
Yes.
We're very proud of the outcome of our efforts to find a solution to this major problem of low frequency noise that arrived when Maersk, about a year ago, 15 months ago, switched the fleet of container vessels to this class of ship. Originally Sunday and Monday night, and I know we've got a few Port Chalmers residents here who are well aware of this. Sunday and Monday night was a pretty miserable night for them as they felt the pulse of that low-frequency noise coming out of the generator of the Maersk vessels. We engaged Marshall Day, who are our noise consultants, to assist in finding a solution. They proposed a muffler system and convinced Maersk that it would work. And then Maersk, to their credit, committed to installing this system. They checked it all up with their consultants and agreed. But they committed to install this system at a cost, we believe, they haven't told us, but we believe it would have been more than $1 million per ship. And they did that on all six ships over a short period of time from December to January. They did it by putting crews on the ship in Singapore or in Asia, and as they steamed down to Brisbane, the first stop, they actually converted installed the muffler on number one generator. And then they flew back and did the next one. And over 2 months, we had six ships retrofitted. A really good effort. Now, we apologise to the Port Chalmers residents for this serious inconvenience over the last 12 months. But we hope they're enjoying a better night's sleep now. And I know, as I said, we've got some residents in the room, and I certainly hope you people are sleeping better too.
We are, and I thank you in it. And the temperature around the port is... The people temperature has really declined. Yeah. So it's fabulous news. It makes an incredible difference.
Is it appropriate for us to thank them for,
yes,
Maersk for doing that?
Absolutely. If you're happy to move, maybe the chair and you second, Councillor Calvert, that we extend our appreciation to Port Otago for resolving the noise issue associated with the Maersk ships.
And to Maersk.
And to Maersk, yeah. And show our appreciation to Maersk as well. Yeah, yep, yep. That was your point.
We can give you the right contact to write to.
Yeah, we can do that.
Good.
Thank you.
Well done. That's fantastic. We've noticed a completely different demeanour from our chair, particularly since the noise issue has been resolved.
It was all worth it even for that.
It was.
You know, $5 million, whatever it took.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Group financials. This chart sets up our financial performance pretty succinctly. Revenue for the year was up 3% versus prior. The half year was 3% versus prior half year. EBITDA was down $1 million due to reduced container volumes. You can see there that the container business is the high margin business. When we lose container volume, we typically lose margin, and that's reflected there. Our tax profit was down $1.3 million, more than the EBITDA was down. This is largely because higher depreciation charges flowing through from the two prior years' pretty heavy capital expenditure, 2018 and 2019, were considerable, and the full 2 years flowed through into this first half depreciation charge. That's just for your perusal, but they're the key numbers on that slide. Moving to our balance sheet, this chart clarifies the reference I made. Oh, sorry, our balance sheet strength is evident from this chart. You can see our bank debt sits at 83 million. It's actually lower than that as we speak. It's down under 80 million. But at the end of the year, it was 83 million versus our current available facility of 100 million. And our equity ratio is a strong 81%. I think our SCI indicates 70 to 75 or something. Yeah, so
85.
we're stronger than that. Our balance sheet, some people call it lazy. I call it robust and resilient. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Kevin, who's going to cover some of the business line highlights for the half year. Thanks, Kevin.
Hey, thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Good morning. Paul's touched on this, but just giving you a breakdown of crews. So you can see there that we've actually had 8 cancellations through to today, which is a bit disappointing, just that unsettled weather, and some of the bigger ships have very tight tolerance on their wind loadings because they're effectively a big sail. So we've had the Ovation of the Sea, which is one of our biggest ships coming in, that has not made it in twice. So fingers crossed it'll make it in, I think it's due next week. So it'll be nice to see that come in because, it's a great ship and carries a few passengers for the town.
Can I ask a question there? Sorry. Is the problem out at sea coming around and it's not coming into us in the harbour?
It's a bit of both. Sometimes it can be just the heavy weather and fog at sea. Last year we had some fog issues. This year we haven't had that. Heavy weather is a problem. But then our channel is probably one of the longest and windiest in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So the tolerance of a big cruise ship, when it gets wind on it, it moves around in the channel. You've only got a certain width of channel, and you're trying to take a corner around Harrington Bend, for example, and the tolerance you have on a bigger ship with lots of windage is tighter.
I get you.
So when it gets to, say, 25 knots, that's their cutoff limit.
Yeah.
It'll be different for every ship. Depends on its windage and what the conditions are. So we assess every ship every day, but the master and our pilots make the final decision, whether we'll bring it in or he decides to omit.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's the process.
We did have one omission relating to the White Island eruption too. That ship was due to come down to us and it went back to Australia.
So we've had 95 cruise ships through as of yesterday, so we're going quite well. So we're still on target. We've got 28 to go. So if they all come in, we'll do 1, 2, 3, as Paul suggested. So fingers crossed the weather's kind to us. And that would be a good result for us as a port and obviously our wider community, because the passenger numbers are really important to the Dunedin economy. So, okay at this stage, this business, so pleased with progress. Paul's touched on our bulk business. So you can see there that logs are still the predominant component of our bulk business, with fuel being a nice contributor. Fertilisers down a little bit this year. It's obviously the spring had an impact on Ravensdown and its demand from farmers, and the other is a mixture of fish, LPG and cement, so it's quite small. So logs is the big part of the business, and you can see there a chart of, I've just found that chart, which is effectively the export log price, and you can see it dip down there closer to the end of the chart there, and where it says October, July, there's a big drop there. So some ports suffered a significant reduction in volumes as export has stopped. Our export has continued to trade, so our volume was pretty good. So at 6 months level, we were in good shape. So it was a pleasing result to be line ball after 6 months, given the conditions. If you look at our container business, quick summary, full exports, that's a mixture of dries and reefers going out, a bit line ball for the first 6 months. Last year's first half wasn't that great either, weather-wise. Imports are up a little bit, but they're only small. And empties, obviously, we need to get a number of empties in to allow the fulls to go back out. And the reduction of transships is as Maersk rejigs their networks. Sometimes they use hub ports, ships are the most movable objects you have. So it's quite easy for them to change their networks at a drop of a hat and sail the ships into a different port. So we lost a bit of activity through transships. A slower start than we would have liked, and we're looking forward to the second 6 months to pick that up, subject to Corona, which we'll cover last. So Chalmers Properties, 8.8 million revenue line, up 3%. Good thing is occupancy is 100% on our investment property portfolio. The lovely big picture there, you can see a roofed warehouse and an unroofed warehouse. If you have a good stare at that, that's our Oak Road Stage 1 in Auckland. And we've got one of the two buildings long-term leased to a blue-chip tenant, which we're really happy with. And we've got some inquiries on the second building. So we're hopeful we'll have that signed up before it's completed in about June. So that's on track for a build and should be a good asset for the business going forward. We sold 0.8 hectares of non-core leasehold land in the period as we just consider those options as they come along. So that's just a process we go through, and sale price around about $350 a square in Dunedin at the moment. So just a reflection of the demand for the land, industrial land in Dunedin, and puts us in a good position going forward as a company. Just to quickly snapshot our portfolio so you can see where we are. So you can, if you look between 19 and the current year to date, we've effectively gained 2% in Hamilton and slightly lower in Dunedin, as the portfolio is just skewed to the North Island a little bit. And that's just a simple function of our Tarapa Gateway development we have in Hamilton. So Tarapa Gateway is the block of land we've been developing for a number of years, and we've put all the investment in the ground and services roads for stage 3, 4 and 5, so we're complete now. So that's the investment in the ground, and it's now a process of selling through sections. And Paul touched on the settlement we had in January of $9 million. So we had 0.3 of a hectare settled in the first 6 months. In the second 6 months, we've got 3.7 to settle, so second half's going to be a lot stronger than the first half for Chalmers, which is great. We've got 6 units being built at the moment in Tarapa that were... they're a mirror of the 6 we built about 3 years ago. They went very well. We've got all 6 leased. So we've got inquiries on 2 of those even before they're finished. So that's looking promising, that development. So that'll be completed by June.
Kevin, what is a unit?
I don't think I've got a photo of them, but effectively if you just imagine small industrial 200 square metre office with up to about 600 metres of warehouse in a block of 3 on one side of a road and 3 on the other. So we did 6 as a first stage, and now we're just going through another 6 at the back of the site. So you'll actually drive through two roads. It's a really good setup for the smaller industrial users.
That's good.
Okay. Yep. So it's not a big dedicated warehouse, it's just a first start. So developments in the first half of the year, just touching on those, keeping our people safe is still forefront of our mind, and we continue to work on our critical risks, which are mainly man and machinery separation. And this photo is quite good because it's got a few things in it. You can see on the left is a porter office. That used to be an asbestos-clad building that we've demolished and cleaned up, and all the roadways have been tidied up there with barriers to ensure our staff are safe. But you can still see a man at the bottom of that truck checking to make sure that that container is going to be lowered into that truck. So we're looking at some technology to have imaging there so that the cab driver will be able to do that without the man's in that area. He's still safe where he is now, and we make sure he is, but it'd be great to have that completely isolated, and then the man and machine would be nowhere to be seen. So you can see there that effectively up on the top corner, there's plenty of hard barriers being invested in the last 12 months to ensure that the heavy machinery, if it does cross a line, hits a hard barrier rather than a painted line. It can come in. There's been some serious incidents in New Zealand in the last 12 months with people walking into the path of a heavy machine, and it doesn't end well. So we're getting good support from the board in that investment and getting through upgrading the port to make it safer. Okay. Paul's talked about Rio. It's been a good project. You can sort of see in the bottom left there, that's actually the silencer up on the roof. The photo doesn't do it justice. It's about probably as big as the gap inside this table here, and it's huge, and it does an amazing job. So it's a great outcome for us. This is the fishing wharf. So we, as part of our build of the wharf extension we completed last year, we undertook to provide an amenity to the community. So we built our fishing jetty, and it is a roaring success. It's a great facility. Kingfish there, it was pretty spectacular, but I heard the local count is 65 salmon caught off it so far this season. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know, but there's plenty of fish going in buckets and kids.
There are long fish stories.
Yes, there's lots of fish stories. So it's a great facility, and we're really proud of it, and it's getting well used.
Just you walk along the side, there's a good track, and there's a park.
So another project that's been going on for a number of years. This was 1990. There was a weather event that brought down a lot of that hill. It changed all the roading, and we had to put the rail out onto the road. It was unsafe where we had trucks and rail and commuters driving around it. So we made the call to spend the money and bench the hill, which we had that wonderful dry winter for a while, and Fulton Hogan did a great job for us and effectively benched it back to that. So that was after a $2.8 million spend and tidy up, which was is designed that a weather event in the future won't bring down any spoils, and the road will be protected along with our community. And the outcome is a beautiful new road and a nice safe footpath. And you'll see the fence on the right hand side of this photo. The train now is inside that fence, which is back in the port boundary. So we've got a proper port again. And
I have to note that that is a safety measure for the chair of the regional council, because she came off on her bike on those railway lines. And a former minister said, when a truck driver offered to give me a lift home, said, no, she can ride.
Have you stabilised that
friends in no places.
It was pretty... Actually, it was really interesting to watch the engineers do this project. Obviously, there's a lot of engineering to work out the type of soil that they had there, and the benching and the angles, and the why it looks so good. Well, I think it looks good. They used drone technology to scan it all the time and make sure that it was feeding directly to the digger driver, and the digger driver couldn't dig any deeper than he was allowed to get the profile just right. It's amazing technology. So it was, we all learned about that for the first time. They used it down at the port, so it was a very good job, very safe, no incidents, not a single complaint from the community about trucks or dust or any issues. So we were really...
There was some vegetation on that there.
Yes, we sprayed it with effectively grass, some of it's taken. It's not perfect yet. In the autumn, we'll be planting on those benches. So there's a lot of natives get planted up on there.
That's great.
Okay?
There's no reason to think that we can't get the vegetation looking like that piece that is great. Yeah.
Okay.
That's really good.
And so nice to tidy up and we move on.
And you'll keep the weeds under control.
Yeah. Yeah. So Taroni Beach, this has been ongoing since 2009, I think. And we're in a great position. We've actually lodged the consent on, I think it was the 6th of December, and it's with the ORC, which is great. We've got some feedback from, and we're working through some questions. And you can sort of see the design hasn't changed for a while. So we're looking forward to getting through that process. Huge community support for this in that area. So we're looking forward to be able to take it from a consenting process to get a green light and then get on with the build. So that's this year's project.
That is so good.
Yeah, it'll be a great amenity beach. Best place to watch the cruise ships come in. Be fantastic. A couple of new initiatives. We always have pictures of the containers we give away. You'll probably see those around the community, which is nice. We always do that. But two new things. We've sponsored 6 schools on our harbour side, and we're teaching the kids to swim. So we've got 400 kids for 2 terms for 3 years. So really good initiative. Pleased with that.
Yeah.
Because we're always connected with the water, and we sponsor, you know, rowing and yachting and everything, but to be able to have kids to swim, we thought was a great idea.
That's
so
good.
It was one of the schools approached us, and we ended up going to all the schools, so it ended up being a great outcome. The Wildlife Hospital we've always been connected with and supporting, and they came to us and said they needed a van. So we've gone out and bought them an electric van, and you'll see it running around town hopefully in about 2 weeks' time, and it's going to look like that. So very cool. So it's nice to help them out because it's a great cause and we're aligned with them. And then you'll see the containers floating around at various sites. So just normal stuff from us. We've got our electric light vehicle fleet. I've sort of explained that in the past we can't electrify at the moment our big equipment. Straddles and side loaders are still... There's two straddles in the world that are electric at the moment, so that technology hasn't improved to a level we can use. But clearly we're looking at our light vehicle fleet, so we've... They're our two Fiordland Pilot vehicles that we use to get our guys across to Milford and back. Even though it's been a bit challenging, we've had to use choppers this last month with the road being closed. But they're our new hybrids, which are great vehicles. And we're just working through all our utes, vans at the moment. And probably by a full year, we might have those all replaced as well. So they'll be straight electric vehicles for us.
That's awesome.
Sorry, just a question on that. I think Centreport is going fully electric with their straddles, and I'm just interested, have they got a very different system?
Yeah, they don't have straddles.
They don't have straddles, so no, they're going electric doing something else?
They're using reach stackers, which are quite different to us.
Okay.
Yeah, there's different modes. Our straddles are 60-ton load,
mm-hmm.
So in the world of trucking, if you think of trucking, it's the easiest one. I think there's Kenworth and Toyota have joined together to look at hydrogen trucks, and they've got one running around in the States, which looks not bad.
Mm-hmm.
The electric battery trucks can't take the load.
No.
So
yep.
Nissan Leaf, you put a tow bar on it and tow a trailer, good luck. No. You won't get far.
Yeah, no. That's why, no. And so is there a statement in the port that you are going as far as, this goes to sustainability, which... it's great, but that you'll go as far as you efficiently can to electric or other forms of...
Well, I think, yeah, we'll be looking at hydrogen more so than electric for our big heavy stuff. If it's going to get legs with the trucking guys, it'll soon get to New Zealand for the heavy machinery.
Okay.
So I think, yeah, we're always going to look at that, what's most practical.
Great, and you could be leaders in it. So ICA put out...
Possibly.
Funding for some things. Often they don't put out funding for things that they don't know that people want. And I suppose the question for that then is, are you keeping in touch with ICA as to what they may provide funding for in order that you may fit in?
No.
No, okay. I think it would be great if you could.
I think that's for the future, once we see some of these options getting to the stage where they've gone from prototypes to actually commercially available.
Mm-hmm.
So... Happy to look at those in the future.
Let's not forget our two container cranes are fully electric.
Yes. Yeah. It's the diesel, you know.
Yeah.
It's the heavy lifting side loaders and straddles are our issue at the moment.
That's the hope.
Thank you. Through the chair, just want to ask you the two that you've got there. So how long does it take? Does it take the battery? Will you get right down to Fiordland and back on one battery, or have you got to charge it?
Yeah, they're a mixture. They're hybrids. So yes, Fiordland's a good trip down and back on pretty rural roads at parts. So that's the hybrid version for us. The light vehicles will be fully electric.
Yeah.
So they'll just run around town and they don't do a lot of miles. So we had to go hybrids because we're not that confident yet in getting across to Fiordland in an electric four-wheel drive yet. That'll come.
And back.
Yeah, that'll come. Then, you know, it won't be too long before those are replaced in future years with, I'm sure they'll be all electric, but just not at the moment.
Yeah, so vans for moving crew and staff around the port, running
they'll
in
be,
and out Dunedin, will be electric.
They're fully electric. So where we can do it. And we're, you know, our forklift fleet's the same. We've got electric forklifts to a certain tonnage, 3.5 tonne, they're quite good. 5.5 tonne, they're very marginal. And above that, they're just not, they don't have the grunt. So we're still looking at that and exploring options.
Do you think hydrogen, what do you think is the lag time? How long do you think until we are actually going to see hydrogen as a...
Last year I was pretty sceptical to say it was a bit of a pipe dream, but the work that Toyota and Kenworth are doing, you know, you can Google it on YouTube, the trucks are running around and they've cracked the issue of holding the hydrogen under pressure in a tank.
Right.
So it looks like that's quite promising. So if they can do that, I think the hydrogen plants themselves are quite chunky in respect of CapEx, and that would have to be a national approach to that.
Yeah.
But it looks like a good solution, you know, for the longer term for heavy industry.
For a plant like ours, where our straddles, if we can get to the hydrogen technology in the straddle itself, we can there is technology where we can generate our hydrogen and compress it at the port. So that the distribution of hydrogen is not going to be the issue, just as long as there's enough electricity in the system.
Okay. So sustainability, Paul's touched on. So we've kicked off with Joe Kane out of Australia. So the process we're working through with Joe is identify what matters to Port Otago and our stakeholders to start with. And then based on that feedback, you develop a sustainability framework and then obviously learn and adapt. So it's got to be right for us, and that's the process we're looking forward to getting into.
Yes, I mean, just following on from that, I mean, do you have an environmental expectation for the ships that do arrive at the port? Obviously, we've had this noise issue. We go, oh, oops, it's a bit noisy. But in fact, I mean, like any ship that bowls up, I mean, is there an understanding that it meets certain noise requirements? I mean, there might be sewage requirements or emissions in terms of air requirements.
Yep.
You know, like, do you have a contract with these guys, or do you say, oh, shit, look who's here today?
It's not quite as bad as that. Effectively, the first line of defence is Maritime New Zealand. So okay. Maritime New Zealand has to approve a vessel coming into New Zealand waters.
Okay.
So they've got the biosecurity risk because you could have something on the hull.
Yeah.
So their focus typically is the seaworthiness, effectively its bio status.
Okay, what about the noise?
That hasn't been an issue, typically.
So there's no standard?
No, not in New Zealand. So typically what's happening is we don't have a lot of say, as we experienced with the Rio, that effectively Maersk changed out their vessel from the L-class to the Rio, and then we found out it was noisy, which we've ended up having to work through and get a good result. But those ships were considerably noisier than most ships on the New Zealand coast. Now they're the quieter ship on the New Zealand coast. So typically I think that's engineered at production level, those noise levels. There'll be an international standard for shipbuilding, I'm sure. The Rios were just a wee bit different.
Okay, and what about emissions from the
emissions,
ship?
Emissions, clearly...
Air and effluent?
Yeah, so as far as effluent's concerned, that's just pretty standard at most ports, that we have services we provide that we can take garbage away and deal with those sort of things. We do that as a port service, and they do that themselves at sea, I'm sure, as well. Depends on what position they're in. But as far as the emissions, being obviously the particulates out of their stack, there's no New Zealand legislation for that, and there's no RMA requirement for ships to have a standard. What we have done is kicked off a process of trying to understand and measure the emissions from ships at Port Chalmers, because we're keen to understand and learn. Because the low sulfur fuel that's come in on the 1st of January effectively dropped the sulfur particulates from 0.5 down to 0.5%. So 5% down to 0.5%, and become a lower impact on the environment. So we're looking to track that and learn about that.
So maybe in the sustainability document you might have some tighter expectations than previously for the ships that arrive, yeah?
Well, that'll be for us to work through, but
yeah.
You know, the ships are calling in a rotation of ports around the world to us. So we're one link in the chain, so we have to work with the others to make sure we've got the appropriate standard. So ideally it's better if it's a national standard in New Zealand and then the shipping lines can adapt.
Yeah.
If one of the ports have a higher standard than all the other ports, that creates problems.
Yeah.
And typically you might end up with the ship not calling. But in saying that, we've had issues with, say, some of the big cruise ships that have been noisy in the port or had the TV screens going, and we've just encourage them to respect the neighbours, and we've had to give them, you know, a couple of follow-ups. And ultimately, if they continue their behaviour, we'd have to say, well, possibly you're not going to come in. So ultimately, that's always our position, but it's a big call to turn away a cruise liner.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Robertson.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the focus on sustainability, and it's been a bit of a shift, I think, in the style of reporting, but also a conscious effort, I think about triple bottom line. And, you've mentioned financial, environmental and the social aspects, particularly being a good neighbour. And I know that you've been consciously investing in those areas, and that's really fantastic to hear. We flew under the radar, I think, a little bit in the past as well, being a bit humble about some of the things that we've been doing. But I know that you've been investing as well and really trying to up the game too, and bring us into a new realm of the way that we do business. Brilliant. And the project that you've mentioned there, I'm just wondering, because we're local government and essentially a business owned by people of Otago, is there something that the regional council should be doing as part of this project? I know we've got a statement of corporate intent, but should we be? Would it be helpful for us to think about what sustainability means to us as owners as well, and support you in some ways, or how are you feeling about that? Because I think it is something, I can say that I really value the way that you're moving in there, but there's nothing formalised as owners about that, so maybe it would help.
Well, I think the clearly we'll have Joe Kane engage with this group, but also the statement of corporate intent is your opportunity to give us some signal, and for the board to take that on board and agree. So that's our overarching document.
We certainly, our SCI this year will incorporate our sustainability project, and we hope to have a new look to our SCI, just to basically punctuate the change in direction and the change in net focus.
Yeah, we'll look forward to being involved and supporting. Brilliant, thank you.
Just before we go to Councillor Calvert, how many more slides have you got?
I've only got another couple.
Who's got? Okay. Councillor Calvert.
Mightn't be the right place, but it just reminded me when it said identify what matters most to Port Otago and our stakeholders. What's happened with the court case that was going on that was the response to the avoid meaning can't do it? We've got an appeal, I think, going on, and we've got it and you've got it, and I'm we're both parties.
It's a matter before the courts.
Yeah. So what is it that, why are we taking it? What do we care about? Can you just flesh out a wee bit where we've got to with it and why it's important enough for us?
Can I just clarify, are we talking about the RPS? Okay, so I'm not sure that we should be talking about it here in a public forum when it's in front of the courts. That's the only thing. If you can give a vague answer...
A vague answer.
Please.
Apart from it's in front of the courts.
Sorry, I wasn't
the issue that we originally had was that we were unable to operate the port under the RPS as it was given, which we would be unable to avoid implications of minor issues like moving a beacon in the Arrowmina salt marsh, which we currently have one. If that fell over, we were unable to replace it, therefore we'd have a navigational issue. And it seemed a bit harsh. Hence, we thought that was impractical to have that constraint on the port to operate safely. The same with if there was a big southerly storm and parts of the mole got jammed into the harbour entrance and we had to get a bigger dredge in, we were unable to do that too. So it was just some constraints on our business that practically we raised, and that's the process we kicked off, and it's subsequently before the courts.
And it's worth our while, both you and us, is it?
Very much so. It's for the future.
Continue
We need to continue this exercise. It's for the future, really, because these constraints don't kick in until the end of a certain period, right?
Well, it'd be challenging, if not impossible, under that regime for us to dredge at the end of our consent. Because adaptive management, which we use well, Arrowmina Surf Break, for example, where we engage with the surfies, and then we place spoil at the right place, get their feedback, go again, until they say it's right, we would be unable to do that.
See, we've got currently 10 or 20 years to run on that consent.
Yes.
But when that consent expires, this would just eliminate the opportunity.
I think we leave the topic.
Yep. Happy to talk.
We'll move on from that topic. Councillor Forbes.
Mine's actually back to the finances, but it is also material in terms of sustainability in some way. And that is, I love, you know, you've got a wonderful return from Chalmers Properties in Hamilton. I just wonder if you've given any thought to what happens if you had invested that money in Otago, in our regional area, would you have been able to make that sort of return, and or is that something you ever consider?
Well, I deal with what we've got in front of us, so it's a wee bit academic, but if you looked at the property returns out of Hamilton and Auckland versus Otago in the last 10 years, you'd win every day in Auckland and Hamilton compared to Otago.
So it is
true. So at a base economic level, mm-hmm. I would say that the portfolio being skewed to Hamilton and Auckland has been a very smart decision by predecessors of this board and management.
And we couldn't do that in this area, certainly not in property, I get that.
But we, in Dunedin, we've Steel and Tube is a great example of a new industrial building that we've built in the last 3 years.
It's just something I think that we're going to be questioned on a bit as time goes on.
Sure. There's 2 points. You know, we started with, I think Chalmers had a capital of $25 million when it was first incorporated. It's now $300 and something million. But the second thing, if you look at what happened with Centreport in Wellington in the Kaikoura earthquake, or the earthquake after that, they had to demolish. They had a small land portfolio. It was entirely at their port. They had it was all in Wellington, and they didn't have any anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And in the space of 20 minutes, their whole portfolio disappeared and became a liability. And so, from the point of view of return, I think we've done the right thing. From the point of view of diversity and risk management, I think we've done the right thing.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Okay, so that's all the good news. Now we're on to the bad news. So coronavirus, this is a developing day-by-day position, so I'm sure we're going to see more. So at a safety level, we had Ministry of Health as the lead agency with, effectively in a port, you've got MPI and Customs that are the first onto any ship typically to clear them. So we're working with both agencies and the Ministry of Health with new protocols for masters that have to sign declarations around the status of their crew before we allow them into the port, before we'll even put a pilot on board. So that's been in place it's been in place for over 3 weeks. So it gives us comfort because typically our pilots are interacting with their crew, they're going in and having a cup of coffee with them. When you get a container ship, our planner goes on board and sits in the cafe and talks to their staff. So typical engagement. So we get declaration around the status of the crew, the status of any cruise passengers, and the cruise lines are doing it very well. They're geared up for it. Novavirus has been a big thing in cruise lines for a number of years, so they've got good medical staff on board and they treat it very seriously. So we're lucky that you think of some of these container ships are going around in 49-day rotation. Typically they don't change the crew for 40 in that rotation, they just let them go around. So typically the crew might be on for 90 days in a row. So you're not getting a lot of change and people coming in and out of China. So effectively, if you fly in from China to Auckland and get on the boat, there's an issue, but that's now closed. So in the early days, we were working through with that, and it's now settled down. So I think we're in a good position to ensure that our staff are safe, and ultimately that's our biggest concern. And then we'll just monitor that with Ministry of Health, and we get daily advisory from them. But at this stage, we're in a nice place with protocols and the processes we've put in place to look after our staff and deal with the Ministry of Health. So that's the health implications. The impact on trade is significant. So Chinese ports have not been working, or if they have been, they've been working at very low levels because effectively their staff got an extended holiday over New Year's, or Chinese New Year, and then effectively they're put into their own 14-day quarantine. So a lot of the staff have been off to last Monday. So this Monday just opened up. The truck drivers were allowed on the road in China. So a bit of a breakthrough. There's trucks driving around in China now. So trucks are pretty important to supply chains from wharfs to factories. So that'll start to get product moving. But you can see there that log volumes have reduced 62% in February, and March we haven't got a single ship booked. So we're expecting volumes to stop, and you would have read in the paper today there's various issues with logging contractors and forest owners trying to slow down enough to keep their crews employed when the Chinese wharfs are effectively stationary. So there's a real issue in the log industry, which will impact us. And then you've got effectively the meat customers we have that are having refrigerated containers, and that's been an issue in China because a dry container box full of Fonterra milk powder can sit on the wharf anywhere and you can stack them really high as long as you know where they are. But a refrigerated frozen meat container or chilled meat container needs power. And a lot of these ports were built with X number of plugs. Our port's got 1,800 plugs, which is very unusual in New Zealand. So we've got a big reefer ability, but a lot of ports haven't got that number. So once they're full and no trucks are taking the product away at the end, you can't put any more on. So effectively the Chinese ports have run out of plugs and power. And some of the transship ports like Singapore and TPP in Malaysia are the same. So New Zealand meat companies trying to send frozen meat up to China, there's nowhere to put it onto power when they get there. So there's been some implications. So everyone then tries to slow down the supply chain, which means hold everything back, which fills up cold stores and drops volume. So volume's down, and then we're just waiting like everyone to see when it actually opens up again. And we learn a bit every day. And it keeps evolving. So whether it's a three-month issue or it's a six-month issue, we don't know, but it's not a three-week issue. So as a result, we've got shipping lines that effectively have got ships coming down from China with no cargo on them to pick up New Zealand cargo to go back. Yeah. So shipping lines are reviewing services because it's highly challenging for them at the moment. So that's what we know as of today. We'll see what happens over the next week, month, but it's not positive for trade.
That completes your presentation. One more slide.
Closed slide.
Yeah,
for Paul.
We've okay. covered everything in that closed slide, so I'm not going to go through it again. I just like to there's a line there on keeping our people safe, and Kevin's mentioned it, but I just want to mention it from the chair. That we will continue our focus and accelerate our focus on keeping our people safe. Our big focus is critical risk mitigation, and that involves improved equipment, improved processes, and improved behaviours. It's a continuous improvement cycle, and it'll go on forever. And we are incredibly closely focused on our safety performance report. We've got a rather robust record in the port industry, and we want to keep it that way. So on that note, I won't go through the rest because we've talked it all right through that stuff already. So I'll end the presentation. If there are any more questions, lovely, happy to answer them.
Yeah, but just before I go to questions, I'll just make a couple of general comments and then we'll deal with the motion that's on the table. Firstly, just to acknowledge on behalf of the Otago Regional Council the interim report, really appreciate the presentation. Generally pretty positive for the first 6 months of the year, but clearly some real challenges, as you've alluded to, with the coronavirus issue. Really appreciate you've emphasised the safe workplace. That's fantastic. That's a high priority. Absolutely marvellous. Sustainability, high priority. Your community initiatives, that's fantastic. So broadly speaking, you seem to be covering a lot of bases. You have a very diverse range of income and assets, which seems to make the business reasonably resilient. And you've got a finger on a number of pies locally as well. And so I'm referring to those community initiatives. So on behalf of everyone, thank you very much for this report. The motion that's on the table is that the Otago Regional Council pass on their thanks to Port Otago and the Maersk shipping line in resolving the noise issue with the Rio ships, something along those lines. Was that what you're after? So moved by Chair Hobbs, seconded by Councillor Calvert. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Questions? Chair Hobbs.
Thank you. It's a very simple question. It comes out of, I don't know where the conversation came, but you recently in port removed a couple of houses. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yep. Is there any intention to rebuild on those sections?
No.
No.
These were substandard old derelict houses that we had as part of noise mitigation, so they were on Flagstaff Hill that we had to buy in previous years.
Okay.
So under the new regulations to have the housing to a certain standard, it wasn't economic to be able to maintain those.
But would you consider building on those empty sections or not?
They were around where we have all the walkways and the reserves.
Right.
So the intention is to free that up
and
use it for public space.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Councillor Wilson, then Councillor Hope.
It's a really, minor one, but sustainability, and I'm well done again on the car, electric car thing, and I much prefer those to the hybrids, but understandably. Understanding where you can take an electric car, or the range does depend on where your fast chargers are, and there isn't one in port at the moment. And I'm just wondering whether you've got any ambitions along that line to be a partner for a fast charger, but also given that the cycleways that are developing, where you're at with both ferries being used across the harbour to move bikes and charging for e-bikes.
Good question.
Because you're going to have a fantastic, and hopefully not conflicting, transport network happening around you.
Yeah.
Okay, so the it is great that cycleways getting done. That's going to be a magnificent tourist attraction, particularly for crews and locals.
Yeah.
And yes, there is the ferry service there, and I'm sure it'll develop, but it's not going to be us.
No, but the infrastructure and everything, there won't be any problems with conflicting with that, but also charging bikes.
No, well, first of all, we're an operating port, so the Dunedin City Council operates the areas that have the amenities and the wharfs, so that's not us, so that's the DCC, and I'm sure they'll work their way through that. And then as far as charging for bikes and cars, clearly when we work through our new office project eventually, we'll have that because we'll need them.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly we're going to have hopefully about 7 or 8 electric vehicles later in the year, so they're going to need to be charged.
There's a couple of directors coming down from Central Otago to meetings are looking for somewhere to charge.
Excellent.
They won't buy a car until they got somewhere to charge.
So we'll make
the bus
sure
is really
they're
good.
Available.
Yeah, and for public as well.
Yes,
and that's great, thank you.
Just the hope.
You may have talked it in the last training, and forgive me, I don't remember, but have you been actively, or with this new lady you've engaged, what happens with your in-house recycling?
Well, I think the Gretchen touched on that we've been doing a lot of good things and keeping our heads down. So I think when I look across our business, we do a whole lot of really cool stuff
and with
good intentions. And what we just haven't had is an overarching framework where we pull it all together and make sure there's either gaps that we should be filling that are filled, and that we can all then pull the complete footprint together and say, this is what we do. So we already recycle. I'm sure we can do better. But I think there's some really good work going on that we just need to line up.
See, we're a smoke-free workplace. We did that 2 years ago under the radar. We just gave our staff, and a lot of our staff were smokers.
Mm.
We gave them 2 years' notice and said, on the 1st of July 2017, we'll be smoke-free. And we are.
And may I ask a subsequent? Sorry, I'm just digging a little bit deeper, but there's no cafeteria. I mean, you've got a lot of staff. Is there, people can't come and buy things like lunches? Or,
no, we don't. We let them wander up the main street and deal with our neighbours, which is great.
Yes.
Our neighbours appreciate it.
I think the neighbours appreciate
it.
200 plus staff wandering up the main street to eat.
Thank you.
Councillor Deakin.
Just, it's still in the sustainability space, which is huge, but, and I see that Gretchen touched on this as well, but I just wanted to explore a bit more. Do you see yourself in a position where you are able to put some pressure on your business supply chain in terms of cruise ships to actually behave better?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's really...
There's the sort of... The first piece is making sure you've got your own house in order.
Yes.
And then it's working both ends of the supply chain to work with your partners to get a better result. So I think that's just inherent in what we'll be doing.
So that's something you do think about.
It's just like, I look at it like our health and safety culture is, we get our culture right at Port Chalmers and Dunedin, and we're working with the trucking companies and C3 and everyone as a PCBU operator to make sure their standards are high too. Because, they might be outsourced and they're not Port Otago, but they're part of our supply chain. So we see sustainability just the same. It's just got to be everything we do, and then we share it.
The spotlight's going to be coming on those cruise ships.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're a very preferable port for the cruise ships. We, you know, at 130 in our planning for this year, we were, I don't know how many we had to decline, but there were a number of cruise bookings that we couldn't take. So we are in a situation where we've got capacity, we're almost at capacity, and we can pick our customers.
Very selective. Nice. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Deacon.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say, Paul, all the best from us for your chairmanship.
Thank you.
You've made a very good start today in terms of fronting up to us and explaining what the company is up to and how it's going. So thank you for that very good start, and all the very best for all your time in the chair. And I wanted to say to all of our Port Otago visitors that I can't speak for everybody around this table, but I am very proud of what you're doing. Yeah. As one councillor on behalf of the people of Otago, we're proud to be your owners, and we're proud to observe the way you're carrying out your functions. It really is good stuff. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Any further questions? All done. Once again, thank you very much, gentlemen. Really appreciate your time being here.
Liz, you've got this sticker. You'll keep that?
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you, people.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So moving on to item 9, which is the annual plan 2021.
Is that diligence specific or IPAC specific? I don't use it, I know that can be fixed.
Sometimes it just depends on the bloody world. That's my problem. Do, no, it won't be. What about screen time?
No, that's me.
No,